Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the punch on third and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the 2007 NFL
season. Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Back in the saddle again. We welcome you inside Patriots Playbook on Patriots.com radio. My name is John Rook. Hope you're getting ready for a great Thanksgiving holiday, no matter where you may be located. We're doing the same here, and the Pats have moved on to 10-0 and beyond, to the point now where we're beginning to turn that corner just a little bit. The season is more than half over. The playoffs are not too far down the road, and yes, potentially history in the making. But a couple of things I wanted to talk about with you today in terms of this whole history-making thing. What's that? No basketball. By the way, there's a little snow out on the ground here right now. Did you see it earlier? Okay, there's actually a little.
I got here at 7:30. It was nice out.
Notice how he underscores the fact that he was here at 7:30. So that's always good to know that he's here doing his job. A lot of things to do, right? Got to get ready for Sunday
porn,
night. At least you're honest, Gary. That's one thing nobody could ever take from you. He's got honesty. Fact is that there's just a little coating, just a little slight little coating, nothing much, just a little flake of snow dust out on the ground out here with the temperature in the mid to high 30s. Just a raw, typical November New England day. And, you know, with the holiday season already getting ready to get upon us, I mean, it feels, for the first time in a long time, it feels like fall, or it feels like, you know, it's getting ready to be winter. And coming back from where I came back from this last week, it's kind of like, damn, I'm not ready for this. Look at Gary, he's playing the world's smallest violin. That was quite an experience. By the way, vastly underrated, Puerto Rico. As a potential Caribbean destination. I know I'm not working for the Chamber of Commerce in San Juan or anything, but I was in Puerto Rico last week for the Puerto Rico tip-off basketball tournament, and which ESPN and ESPNU televised. And I have to say, you know, if you're not too sure about, like, Jamaica or Dominican, or you want to go someplace that, you know, can be reasonably assured, you know, that you're going to get your money's worth, Puerto Rico's not a bad choice. It's really not. It was actually a very, very good time. That having been said, I got a chance to see, by the time I was off the air with my basketball game on Sunday night, because we had the championship game of the tip-off, I got a chance to see a quarter and a half of the Patriots and Bills. That was what I got to see. And by the time I got to see it, it was already over. It was 42-7 when I tuned it in. And I don't think that should send anybody running and screaming like, oh, well, what could he possibly talk about? I mean, goodness gracious, he didn't even see the game. First of all, I had play-by-play reports in my ear of the entire thing, number one. Number two, what else do you need to know except Brady DeMoss, Brady DeMoss, Brady DeMoss, Brady DeMoss? You don't need to know anything else. That was it, story of the game. And I really find somewhat curious the continuing, I don't know, the continuing thought process of the Patriots being bullies and running up the score. And, you know, I'm just, are we getting tired of that yet? Anybody getting tired of that? Now, I would tell you that I don't think that this New England Patriot team, I think this New England Patriot team has the potential to be, first of all, one of the greatest teams of all time. That's not going to come as any surprise to anybody. You know that. I know that. We all know that. It can certainly happen. But the Patriots haven't won anything yet. Right now, through 10 weeks, they have the potential, again, to be maybe the best team of all time. But again, they haven't won anything. So if you had to rank this team right now compared to the other great teams in NFL history, they're not even on the radar. And the reason they're not in the radar is simply because, well, quite frankly, they haven't won anything yet. Now, we've talked a little about this. We haven't dwelled on it a lot, but we have talked a little about it. And I hope that that kind of puts everything in its perspective. This, sort of all being, taken into consideration, our good friend Greg Easterbrook from ESPN Page 2 rears his ugly head again today with his TMQ, his Tuesday Morning Quarterback column today. Although at least the Patriots are not, top of the line, front page, article dominating victims as he has, portrayed them, or as he has put them up on this hate pedestal on ESPN. I did want to read you, though, what he had just come out with in the last couple of hours, if you even had a chance to scoot on over there, just briefly. I know there are a lot of you that are kind of like me. It's kind of like, I don't really think that I want to go because I know that he's going to do nothing but, espouse, hatred or what have you. And so, but that's fine. He's a contrarian. That's what he's supposed to be. He's supposed to be a contrarian. This is what he does. Just like any good newspaper columnist that's going to take the opposite side of an argument. That's what he's supposed to do. But I wanted to read you this because frankly, there is actually some, there's actually some truth to it here today. So in the interest of, presenting all sides of the story, this is from Easterbrook today. He says, at the end of the third quarter, the Patriots were leading Buffalo 42-7, more than the margin of the greatest comeback in NFL history. Yet Tom Brady was still on the field, still throwing passes like mad, while the flying Elvi were going for it on fourth down rather than attempting a field goal, frantically trying to run up the score. This is bad sportsmanship. Plus, it needlessly exposes starters to injury. This is when I start to chuckle. New England possessions Sunday night. Touchdown, 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 punt. That's impressive until you get close to the end of the string when more touchdowns are needed. Okay, my chuckling gets a little more frequent now. It's one thing for the Patriots to be determined to win. Quite another for their coaches to be determined to convince the world they are poor sports. This is extremely weird. Why would anyone want to convince the world of this? Should the Patriots advance to the Super Bowl, still displaying bad sportsmanship at every chance, the postscript on the whole NFL season might be this word, bummer. Okay, now I'm starting to guffaw. The flying Elvi are doing everything to near perfection, but the Tuesday Morning Quarterback continues to think too much credit is going to Brady and his flashy receivers, not enough to the offensive line and defensive front seven. On the night, Brady was never sacked. He was hit only once, and hurried only once. Otherwise, he stood in the pocket as though he was posing for a magazine cover, no rusher even near him. Put Joey Harrington behind New England's great offensive line, and he'd be a star.
I wish you could just shut your big yapper!
Well, now, obviously, I'm on the floor rolling and choking with that last line. Put Joey Harrington behind New England's great offensive line, and he'd be a star? Please, this is where the man really kind of loses credibility with me. I don't know about you, but with me.
Very funny, you guys.
Here's what else he says. He says, when New England was on defense, J.P. Losman was sacked four times and hit really hard on three other occasions, despite Buffalo's keeping at least six back to block. Brady's passes were right on the numbers. Losman's passes were hitting the turf in front of his receivers. Superior New England line play was the reason for both outcomes. That part I'm not going to argue with too much. Yes, the Patriots had great offensive line play. Yes, they've had very solid offensive line play all year. And Bill Belichick said as much yesterday on Patriots Monday. He gave great credit to Matt Light, who he thinks is having an outstanding season. And yeah, you'd have to say, based on what we've known in the past, sure. This may be his best season yet as a pro. Logan Mankins, already getting mentioned as a potential all-pro candidate. Certainly a Pro Bowl candidate. So we'll give some credit where credit is due on the line. But please, Harrington, a star behind this line? How about this? Joey Harrington would be third team behind this line, behind Brady and Matt Cassel. Anyway, I digress. Speaking of receivers, according to Greg Easterbrook, when will someone jam the ones from New England? Game after game, defensive coordinators play New England by having the corners backed off and soft. Attention, this is not working. Tuesday Morning Quarterback continues too long to see what will happen if a defense simply jams the New England receiving core the way New England corners almost always jam their opponents. Well, let's see. Let me see if I can kind of figure this out. Recently, a couple of teams that have tried the jam at the line procedure I would have to say I believe the Colts did that a bit. I certainly know to an extent that the Redskins did that a bit, and they got burnt like toast. And the reason being is because the Patriots were able to attack the middle, and they were able to go over the top because the Patriots receivers are talented. Now, I have said on several occasions this year, if I was going to defend the Patriots, what I would do personally is smack them in the mouth, just like the Patriots did the Rams, you know, back in Super Bowl 36. But you also have to have somebody, you know, you have to have somebody shadow the middle of the field. You have to have somebody put a hurting on Wes Welker and or Benjamin Watson or whoever's going over the middle. And then hope that what you can do is perhaps leave enough gaps to where the Patriots would try to attack you with the run. I would make the Patriots run to beat me. That's what I would do right now. Because I'm convinced now more than ever that Lawrence Maroney is now not a durable enough back to get this job done in the long haul. The Patriots may still go down as one of the greatest teams of all time this year, but if you really want to think seriously about actually status quo next year, or even, dare I say, improve this product, a running back is in the offing. Another back. I don't think Maroney's the answer, and I'm convinced more of that than ever. He's not durable. Six carries for 19 yards on Sunday night convinces me of this. I realize the game was probably out of hand, and I also realize, well, hey, you got, you know, Randy Moss and company catching Tom Brady's balls. Who the heck, then, would you need to run the football, and why would you need to run the football? Well, that's a little silly as well. Everybody needs to run the football at some point. And the way that, you know, both Eth Evans and Kyle Echol were actually running the ball in garbage time, which for pretty much was the last quarter and a half of the game on Sunday night, then, you know, if they're able to get yardage against Buffalo's defense, then why do you need a running back? I understand all that. I personally am not convinced that Lawrence Maroney is durable enough to get this job done to be the number one guy. I think he would be a good change of pace back. I think he'd be a good guy to share the job with if you're in a job-sharing situation like what the Patriots had last year with Corey Dillon. I'm convinced now that maybe they, even though I don't think that they will, I'm not convinced that next April they'll keep, you know, that right now top five draft pick somewhere in that vicinity that San Francisco has. I'm still not convinced they'll keep it, but if they do, I think the likelihood of them taking an offensive player is probably slim to none. A defensive player, a linebacker, maybe a Jim Laurinaitis type from Ohio State would probably be in the offing there because of the age of the overall linebacking core. But I also think there should be some heavy consideration given to a guy, a game breaker, a game changer, like a Darren McFadden. And we talked about this a little last week in a couple of emails. Can you imagine? If you had not only the ability to go between the tackle, but the game-breaking speed that a guy like McFadden has. Did you see when he put up 300-plus a couple of weeks ago? I mean, Arkansas's not having a great season. He's a tremendous, tremendous offensive talent. And this is hard for me to say, because I'm a Texas Longhorn. And Arkansas was at one time one of our fiercest rivals. It's hard for me to give up anything to those guys. But, you know, it's kind of like, you know, Adrian Peterson of Oklahoma. Hell, I'd love to have him on my team. I don't think he's quite the power back that a guy like Peterson would be now for the Vikings, but he's got enough speed that if he gets into the linebacking core, you're not going to touch him. All he has to do is get past that line of scrimmage. And they think people believe that the Patriots are running up the score now? The running up the score argument is tired, it's cliche, it's trite, it's worn out. Fact is that I happen to agree 110% with Bill Belichick. Shock and surprise here. What do you want us to do, kick a field goal? No. I mean, absolutely not. That's automatic points. It's much easier to put a field goal up on the board than it is to just run the ball on fourth down, try to make somebody stop you. The Bills are right. The Redskins are right. Everybody who's been spoken to about this subject. Dick Geron was this last week. Obviously, Joe Gibbs was when asked if, you know, he thought the Patriots would run up the score. Did you have any problem with the way Patriots played the game? And their answers were no, I had no problems at all. Marv Levy said as much. Frankly, Marv Levy is one of the guys that I respect the most in this game right now. And I really believe he's got to be part of the reason why the Bills are somewhat resurgent now at 5-5 overall, having won four in a row to put some respectability back in their season. You know, when the Patriots beat them the first time 38-7, it was kind of like, oh, my God, will they win a game? So you have to give the Bills some credit. Some credit. Marv Levy said as much. They have a marvelous team. I have no problems with doing what they're doing. It's our job to stop them. And that's absolutely right on. It has nothing to do with sportsmanship. You want really bad sportsmanship, Greg Easterbrook, and anybody else who cares? Kick field goals on those instances. Put up 3 points when it's a chip shot. You're telling people on fourth down and one or two or whatever it was the Patriots have gone for, you're saying, all right, here it comes, stop us. And it's the Patriots' offensive line. Already you've given great credit now to the Patriots' offensive line, Greg. Already you've said it's the greatest line in the world. Then why wouldn't you run behind it? What is the sportsmanship aspect of all of this? You're telling me that paid professionals, and might I say very well-paid professionals, are supposed to lay down? Is that what you're saying? How is that sportsmanlike if you lay down for your competition? That's not sportsmanship. That's an insult. Now, if you want to get into sportsmanship, all right, well, then if you want to, you know, pull in the reins a little bit on an undermanned opponent, all right, well, then let's talk to some of the high school juggernauts that are out there. I mean, in the state of Connecticut, for God's sake, they have a 50-point rule. And if your team blows out another in the state of Connecticut in high school football by 50 or more, your coach gets suspended for a week. Can you believe that? How is that sportsmanship in an effort to keep routes from happening on the field? That is so much. It's just it's indescribable. I almost uttered an obscenity, and I'm not supposed to, even if it is the Internet. It's terrible. It's awful. Can you believe that rule? It's terrible. How about in college football when we have, you know, teams like, you know, anybody up, name any school in the top 10 right now. I'm sure that they've hung half a hundred on somebody and done it 50 to nothing or 74 to 20 or something like that. Let's talk to those schools about bad sportsmanship. Why would you do that? What's the need for it after, you know, you're ahead, you know, by four or five touchdowns in the third or fourth quarter? There's no need for it. So and those are supposedly amateurs, although I think the whole college football is an amateur sport is a sort of a stupid thing to say as well. But you can certainly make more of a case for that being unsportsmanlike than you can for it like that in the pros. The reason that people are complaining is because this doesn't happen at all. And so when we finally see a high school and or a college scenario unfold in the professional ranks where it's supposed to be even and everything's supposed to be full of parity, we automatically think, uh-oh, what's wrong? What's happening bad to our game? What's going on here? It's not supposed to happen this way. What's happening is that you actually have the perfect storm. You have the perfect football storm. You have a quarterback who has pinpoint accuracy, who is tailor-made to stand in the pocket, who has great peripheral vision, who knows his offensive system to the nth degree, knows the checkoff routine, has receivers who are all physically talented and smart, has running backs who, if they're not durable, at least know where to be, has an offensive line that's played in front of him now pretty solidly, together as a unit for 3 years, plus in some instances. And you've got all of the positive factors coming together. It's the perfect offensive storm. And because we're not used to seeing it, because it's something that, you know, quite frankly, you know, it's different. It's unsportsmanlike. It can't possibly be good. Kind of like indulging in too much chocolate, you know? You can't do that. It's not good for you. Can't be good for you. How could something that good possibly be good for you? Well, same thing. How could this kind of football possibly be good for anybody? Fact is, we don't know any better. This is what football is. And when you're talking about paid professionals here, sportsmanship, look, we'd all like to think it's a perfect world. We'd all like to think that, you know, when the game is over, and I think for the most part, these guys do this. They do shake hands. They do talk to each other. Guys on each team, they know each other. They either went to school with each other or they know each other from other teams and other relationships and guys who know guys and coaches. And, you know, after the game is over, for the most part, guys can be civil. They can congratulate each other on a well-fought battle, on a good game, well-played. They can be sportsmanlike. That's sportsmanship. okay? The ability to be civil after the battle is done. That's sportsmanship. But when the whistle blows and the clock is rolling and you're playing or you're operating between the chalk lines, sportsmanship doesn't enter into the equation. I mean, if you want to have a sportsmanlike gesture by helping up a fallen opponent on the field, that's fine. And I think that shows class more than anything else. But I think there's a difference between class and sportsmanship. See, I think it's bad sportsmanship if you, again, as I mentioned just a little bit ago, it's bad sportsmanship if you let up, if you take a dive. That's demeaning your opponent. That, in and of itself, is poor sportsmanship. So this whole issue of running up the score being, you know, bad sports and the Patriots are being, you know, bad or evil, as Greg Easterbrook might say, or that's just so much poppycock. It's just not even it's laughable. It's absolutely laughable. They got to stop them. And if they don't stop them, they have every right in a paid professional sense to do what they're supposed to do. Their job, Josh McDaniels has said it, Bill Belichick has said it, the players themselves have said it, our job is to score touchdowns. Our job is to perform the very best that we can out on the field at all times. Our job is not to run three plays and punt. Our job is not to just milk the clock and then pooch kick because we're already up 42-7. Our job is to put the ball in the end zone. And because we haven't seen an offense or a team like this in maybe, well, I don't know, forever, it's bad. I mean, they said Columbus was wacko when he called the world round, too, and didn't call it flat. I'm kind of over-exaggerating here, but I hope that you understand where I'm going with this. It's just, I don't get it. I really don't get it, running up the score watch. To me, all credibility is lost when he says that even Joey Harrington could perform behind the Patriots' offensive line. Come on. Oh, please. That's just almost laughable. So anyway, there you go. A little bit of cannon fodder for today. Your thoughts on the whole running up the score issue. The fact is that now, you know, it's a divisional opponent. You've beaten them by a combined score of what now? 94-17 in 2 weeks? Nobody's ever really done that before. We're charting an we're moving into uncharted waters here is what we're doing. And so we don't know. We don't know how to handle this. We don't know how to react. Or at least we're not sure how to react. And the fact that, you know, teams like maybe Dallas and or Green Bay are better sports than the Patriots, come on. That's just not right. That's absolutely not right. The Packers? The Cowboys? Terrell Owens? Please. Please. Fact is that you recognize that there is a bully in the NFL block. Fact is, nobody likes the bully on the block. Nobody likes the bully that consistently beats and beats up on other teams. Therefore, you're going to itch for every opportunity you can to have the bully take a sucker punch. You want the bully to go down. You want the bully brought down to your level. Fine. That's okay, but let's call it what it is. It's not poor sportsmanship. What it is a physically and maybe even intellectually superior team hitting on all cylinders, operating in, again, what I call the perfect offensive storm based on the personnel you have and the scheme that you have running that personnel. That's all it is. And right now, there's just not a defense in the National Football League that can stand up to it. The Patriots are their own worst opponent. The Patriots are the only team that can stop the Patriots, at least in my estimation, at this time. The Patriots should go 16-0. Hard to say about the playoffs. It'd be great if they could do it. If they go 16-0, I think everybody realizes that 19-0 would be the natural progression here. But, you know, once you get in the playoffs, things change. They really change. And, depending upon who they would end up facing in the playoff round, I mean, it's a different sport. Playoff football is a different sport than regular season football. There are three seasons to the football season. There's the preseason, there's the regular season, there's the postseason. I think you all realize that all three are in and of themselves different seasons. Preseason's laid back. Regular season, you're getting ready. You're in a long grind, so you really don't get too carried away. And then the postseason, all hell breaks loose because you have nothing left to play for. You have nothing to save up for next week. If you don't put it all out on the line, and the particular week that you're playing, you're done. You're playing golf. The season's over. So there's much more sense of an urgency. There's much more emotion. It's just highly charged. It's a different beast. And the smallest things become much more magnified in the playoffs. So I'm not going to venture out and say, yeah, 19-0, woo, they should win it all the way. No, I'm not going to do that. I'll leave that to you or anybody else that wants to do that. But what I will say is, though, is I'm totally and completely convinced there isn't a team on the schedule that can touch them now, especially after watching the Jets kick a field goal to beat Pittsburgh this weekend. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. Now, does that mean that there's nobody on this schedule in the last six games? There's nobody on the schedule that's capable? No. Doesn't mean that. But when you look at the Eagles, Ravens, Steelers, Jets, Dolphins, Giants, left on the Patriots schedule, the toughest opponent is the Patriots. Patriots are their own worst opponent, because the only way I think that they get beat by any one of those six teams is if they shoot themselves in the foot. Number one, injuries are always a factor. I realize that you say, well, injuries aren't supposed to be an excuse, and really they're not. But let's face it, if two or three key people on this team go down, and I think you probably know which are the two or three that I'm speaking of at this stage, then all bets are off. If the Patriots turn the football over multiple times, especially in their end of the field, then all bets are off, because other teams are capable of moving the football. Now, the Patriots' defense has largely been overshadowed by the unbelievable effectiveness of the offense. As I said, the perfect offensive storm. But that doesn't mean that they can't bend and crack every now and then. And we've seen that happen. I mean, honestly, I still think the best way to beat this team is to try to ball control and keep the Patriots' offense off the field. We've seen a couple of teams try to do that and end up failing. Colts did it beautifully, I thought, and I think we realized that's been a close call. The Patriots were fortunate. But the Colts had a great game plan offensively against the Patriots a couple of weeks ago. Great game plan. Almost got them the W. It doesn't mean that it can't happen if the Colts end up coming here in the playoffs. It certainly could happen. Doesn't mean it couldn't happen in a Super Bowl, whether it's the Cowboys or the Packers or whomever else might survive in the NFC. It absolutely could happen. And if you add to that turnovers and poor field position, penalties and things along those lines, then honestly, all bets are off. But of those last six opponents, there's no doubt in my mind that the worst, or at least the most challenging opponent, will be the Patriots themselves. No doubt about it. Coming up on the program a little bit, we're joined, of course, by Brian Lowe from Patriots Today. He's going to step in here just momentarily and join us. Also, Russell Baxter from ESPN, ESPN.com, the NFL research coordinator, because Thursday, of course, is a holiday.
Baxter!
And Thanksgiving holiday, and we'll be taking the time off, and I hope that you will be as well with your family. And Thursday's normally being Russell's normal day during the week. Russell's going to join us in the second hour of our program today to not only talk about the Pats, but to look ahead at the Turkey Day and, of course, Week 12 NFL schedule. So that is all coming up on the program today. Your emails are always welcome. We got a ton to get to as well from previously today. Webradio@patriots.com is how you reach us. Webradio@patriots.com. Telephone line is open and available to you at 508-543-7482. 508-543-7482. I want to know if you actually had a chance to read Mr. Easterbrook today and what you thought of that and what you think of the whole, and we've talked about this on and off, but what you think of his current stance on the sportsmanship level as we welcome in Brian Lowe.
Thanks for having me.
Always great to have you.
The Tuesday morning quarterback. Tuesday morning quarterback ends up being a Tuesday evening quarterback for me, so I haven't gotten to that yet. But I can just imagine.
Well, I read the excerpt. It was, I guess, put up on ESPN.com a couple of hours ago, and the excerpt really, without going into huge details, was that he basically still calls the Patriots basically bad sports. And because they went touchdown, 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 punt. And that when they finally punted the football, that some starters were still in the game. And, again, he says, you know, too much credit's going to Brady and the receivers, not enough to the offensive line and defensive line, which I don't necessarily disagree
with.
That's
a huge point. I mean, that's true, but was that part of his argument?
He believes that the Patriots, he says, it's one thing for the Patriots to be determined to win, quite another for their coaches to be determined to convince the world they are poor sports. I don't get that. Why would the coaches care flip one? The coaches are just doing their job.
Right, and I try to go by what, you see quotes from the opposing teams, and with the exception of your stray Washington Redskins linebacker, I forget who it was, who had a beef with Belichick and actually voiced his displeasure on the field, most opposing players, and I remember the Dolphins, for the most part the Redskins, and certainly the Bills, had no problem.
No, none.
No problem whatsoever. They take it like men. They say, you know, we've got to stop them. I don't feel embarrassed by that. They're out there doing their job. We're doing our job.
And that's the part. I think that's the thing we all have to realize, that if the players and the other teams in particular as a whole, and I should say more specifically the other teams as a whole,
because
you're right, there are a few renegade players out there who obviously run at the mouth.
Yeah, I forget the player with the Redskins, but there was one player who on the field.
Linebacker. Who the heck? I forget.
It wasn't London Fletcher.
No.
No, it was it doesn't matter who it was. It doesn't matter who it was. But
no, but there are a couple of odd things to be said like that. However, when the teams themselves say, I don't have a problem, why should anybody else give a rat's ass?
Well, and here's the thing. You know, was it on a few of these plays where they went for it on fourth down? Now, would I think that maybe, hey, handing the ball off to Kyle Eckel or to Heath Evans is maybe your best option? And just, I mean, you only need a yard anyways. It's kind of, I think even the Patriots might admit that, If we did research on how often teams go for it on fourth down when they're already up by 21 or whatever, they might not have 3 and 4 wide receivers out there and passing and all that. There might be something to that, but that's their offense right now. That's the way they operate. So their mentality is, we're just doing our offense. We're just playing our offense. We're almost respecting the other team in the sense that, hey, it's still the third quarter. We don't feel like the game is over. Neither should you. So we're going to still keep playing. And that's the way they go about their business. The other teams don't have a problem with it. Marv Levy didn't have a problem with it. I don't think I heard Dick Geron have anything to say. I mean,
no.
You know, stop them.
He had nothing to say. You've got to stop them.
Right. It would be more demeaning to take a knee. It would be almost more demeaning to take a field goal.
Well, that's exactly Bill Belichick's point when he says, right. What do you want us to do, kick a field goal?
Right.
It's a heck of a lot more demeaning because you're putting automatic points on the board.
Right. A field goal at the 10-yard line
when you go for it on fourth down, you're giving a team a chance to stop you and take the ball over.
A field goal at the 10-yard line, I guess unless you're Adam Vinatieri, is basically a guarantee of 3 points. I'm kidding there. It's basically a guarantee of three points. And when you go for it on fourth down, exactly that. It's 11 guys going up against 11 other guys. May the better 11 win. And, you know, you're giving them the opportunity to try to reverse what had been an embarrassing, you know, display from the Bills' perspective. You know, so, you know, I know we're going to keep hearing this running up the score because, you know, maybe not necessarily this week, but there are still some games where...
Well, there are two games left on the schedule. I think people are going to be kind of like, name the score.
Right.
Obviously, the Jets and the Dolphins.
Right.
So, you know, the other ones stand to be at least reasonably competitive for a while.
You know, but we thought that going into a few other games, too. And
but you know what? The Jets game, which, you know, obviously will come up on the 16th of December, it just wouldn't surprise me to see that game become a struggle. Number one, because you have to consider the time of year. And if weather comes in and plays a factor at all.
Weather is a factor in games because that is, you know, not necessarily the great equalizer, but it can level the playing field a little bit because, you know, you're talking about.
We here, Brian, are going to be everybody, and I say the collective we. I'm including the fans here. Mm-hmm. That stadium that day will be primed for a bloodletting based on this whole Spygate thing that has, you know, come out this year.
Right.
Everybody in that stand, in those stands, and in that press box are going to be expecting the Patriots to thoroughly decimate the Jets that day and put a real hurting on them. And I'm going to be the first to tell you that I don't necessarily think that that's the case. I don't think that that's going to necessarily happen. And I really don't think that the guys down the hallway are going to go into that game thinking, all right, we have to beat the crap out of them because of what they did to us. That's not going to be their motivation.
No. It's not. I don't think it comes up. I mean, down the hall. I don't think it's you know what comes up every week. Every time they're talking about, you know, their game plans, it, you know, motivation for that particular game. I don't know if that comes up. But you know, I'm talking just as much from a talent standpoint, let alone any of these other intangibles, camera gate and all that. I think from a talent standpoint, it's going to be an ugly outing for the Jets. That alone. I mean, I think, put it this way. I think from a talent standpoint, it's about a 3-touchdown difference.
Probably.
All things being equal, and weather not being a huge factor, it's probably a 3-touchdown difference.
Well, but again, weather has an ability to be a great equalizer,
sure.
You know, and quite frankly, the Jets could also be the team that has a little chip on their shoulders based on what happened previously.
They so, better. If they don't, they're not.
They
don't, if they don't, they shouldn't be on the team.
They better have a chip
on their shoulder. But did the Bills have a chip on their shoulder after getting beaten down here and J.P. Lossman?
You would think
be out. You know, they may have had a chip on their shoulder, and it wasn't like there was precipitation or heavy wind the other day, but it was a cold day. I mean, it was a day where you maybe thought, hey, the Patriots, Brady to Moss, maybe they start getting slowed down. We get cold weather coming up, setting records all over the place. I mean, I think teams that have chips on their shoulder, you know, might add in the emotion and all that, but I just think when it gets right down to it that the talent level is going to be that much different. Somewhat along these lines, do you realize the Patriots have beaten their three AFC East opponents on the road by a combined, I think it's 91 points?
Yeah.
You talk about in the NFL, you know, division road games. After any time the Patriots win a division road game, as long as I can remember, the first thing coming out of Bill Belichick's mouth is, well, you know, it's always good to get a division win on the road, a hard-fought
right.
game and all that. So clearly division road games are almost a separate category for teams. Those are huge games. An average of 30 points in their wins over their three divisional foes on the road this year. It's just a talent difference. I mean, all these intangibles and chips on their shoulder and all that, you know, do they play a small part? Yeah, probably, maybe, but, you know, it's a talent question. I think that's why Patriots Jets in December and Patriots Dolphins in December, you know, will probably ultimately be blowouts.
All right, let's see if we can bang out some emails, shall we?
Sure.
Got a ton to get to from earlier today and those that have come in since the beginning of our program. And again, B-Lo will be here for a few more minutes, and then we'll have Russell Baxter from ESPN join us after the 3 o'clock hour begins, and then we'll also hear from Coach Belichick before rounding up the show today.
Got to get that coach
short,
in there.
Well,
got to get the coach
short
in.
Work week this week. Because of Thursday's holiday.
It is.
And it'll
it
actually
is.
Be a little shorter around here. I think they'll try to make some time for the guys to get home and spend time with their families on Thursday.
I think they have them in on Thursday, but maybe they squeeze everything into a
shorter amount of
earlier
time.
In the morning time frame.
Right.
And do you remember before the schedule came out back in March or April or whatever mm-hmm. it was pretty much known, I think actually officially known, that it was either going to be Patriots at Cowboys on Thanksgiving or Jets at Cowboys because of the TV schedule that was, you know, the Cowboys were going to be playing an AFC team, and those are the
right.
two teams. And think about that. Think about how much different this week would have been then.
If we had to go to Dallas.
If we were going
to
Dallas
then.
Tomorrow. It feels like, you know, I mean, you know, you just get back from Buffalo. Now,
hey,
maybe it wouldn't have been a night game.
How about two teams that are 10-0 that could have been? At some point,
you know what? That's a great point too. Because if you figure the
Jets had played them early, you could have had 2 10-0 teams playing on Turkey Day,
and it would have trumped the game a couple weeks ago against the Colts, which was the latest in a season that
right.
2-7 and 8 or 8-0 teams didn't even think about that. But you're right about that. Can you imagine?
Stunning.
Can you imagine Green Bay Detroit all of a sudden this
meaning
year a big game, which
meaning
usually
something.
It wouldn't, and Patriots Cowboys
would have been
and
an
imagine.
That would have been
Michael
a Thanksgiving
Vick,
day for all time.
And imagine if imagine if Michael Vick wasn't in jail and the night game was Peyton Manning against Michael Vick.
Yeah, everything.
What a day that would have been.
Yeah, it would have been a heck of a day. We came very close anyway.
Wow.
All right, Steve says the Patriots are the number one team. I'm concerned about the sports channels saying they'll go 16-0. Don't misunderstand me. I hope the Patriots do go 16-0, but there's a chance they won't. Did you ever think the Jets would beat the Steelers? You just never know. That was just my point.
Well,
now my question is, do you think the Eagles have a chance on beating the Pats Sunday? Westbrook's one of the best. McNabb wants this game bad, although he did get injured. What do you think the chances are in an Eagles win? Second question, do you think Moss will stay because the Patriots do not like to pay, is what he says. Let's take the second one first.
The second one being,
I actually
can
believe
the Eagles win?
No, the second one being Randy Moss staying.
Oh, okay.
I actually think he will. I think the Patriots will find a way to restructure the deal, and I think Randy wants to stay based on everything that we've heard and seen thus far.
There's no restructuring needed. He's on a one-year deal.
He's on a one-year
he's
deal.
An unrestricted,
so, well, so, but I mean, he could go out and get more money elsewhere, but I think he likes his environment.
Right.
I think he likes Tom Brady throwing to him,
right.
and I think he likes winning.
The question is, can the Patriots finalize something before he hits the open market?
That's what we hope.
That's more the question. And I do think that he comes back, and I think, you know, most likely Stallworth doesn't. But I think Moss has been true to his word from the very beginning when he said he's excited about coming to a winning environment. He has lived up to everything, obviously on the field, but from all accounts off the field, he's, you know, you see him in the locker room, you see him at practice. He's one of the guys, and I think that maybe is he. It wasn't the case in Minnesota and Oakland. I think it's almost the perfect storm of, you know, winning environment. He's at the stage in his career where that's what he wants. You know, he has an opportunity. Now, if they were 10-0, but he had 20 catches for 300 yards and two touchdowns, would he be singing a different tune? Would he be the same, you know, team first guy? We don't know. We don't have any reason to know that. But, you know, I agree. I think one way or another, he's back next year and probably long term.
As far as the Eagles winning on Sunday,
no chance. I don't think. No, I'm being dead serious. I think if McNabb plays and is healthy, they might. You know, it might be a competitive game through, you know, in the first half. I don't see the Patriots,
no,
you know, winning by less than two touchdowns.
I
think if McNabb doesn't play, forget about it. I think this will turn out to be the classic game where the Patriots say, all right, Brian Westbrook is far and away their top offensive playmaker and really the guy who makes that tick.
How much do you think Dante Stallworth is looking forward to playing on Sunday?
And that's another thing. I was talking, you know, I was having some conversations with other people about, you know, this whole idea of staying focused and all that, and you win by 46 points week in and week out, how do you stay focused and all that? And I was saying, well, in this particular game, you've got two things. You've got the chance to clinch your division on home turf. Now, granted, if the Bills...
Which, by the way, mathematically, they can do.
They could do it without suiting up. If the Bills lose to Jacksonville, it's over.
It's over.
And that's earlier in the day. But let's say hypothetically, the Bills beat the Jaguars, okay? So earlier in the day. The Patriots' motivation is we can clinch the division in week 12, which is virtually as early as you can, in front of our home fans, okay? There's, you know, not like that's something they've never done before, but that's some motivation. And then I said, you know, the other motivation might be, you know, Wednesday morning at the, you know, first team meeting of the week, Belichick gives all his, you know, McNabb this, Westbrook that to the team, and then he says, hey, Dante, anything you want to add? And, you know, I don't know exactly how it went with Dante Stallworth and the Eagles. I don't think it ended. I think he had a pretty good year last year and probably figured they're going to want him back, and they didn't. Even if he's lying. I mean, he'll just go on. You know, let him take over.
Let him
there.
Kind of set
so
the
I
tempo.
Think, you know, it's almost like the following week, Adalys Thomas at Baltimore. Hey, Adalys, anything you want to add? Get these guys riled up? You know,
right.
So you got a little bit of motivation, and I just think, you know, the Eagles are, you know, probably a decent NFC team, okay? They've... you know, they've big win last week, not this past week against Miami, big win last week against Washington, a game that they absolutely needed, and they showed some guts, and they, you know, they win that game. But I think they're a mediocre at best team in general, and they come here. I mean, these fans here haven't seen this team in a month.
I
think it's going to be quite an atmosphere Sunday night for a stadium that, you know, we've talked in the past about, you know, it's not like this crowd is the loudest, the loudest crowd. You know, I think this is going to be a good atmosphere. I think the Patriots are going to come out strong. And McNabb or no McNabb, I don't think the Eagles are going to have a chance.
Jamie says, I know it's almost a sin to be thinking about stuff like this, but with simply astounding display of football prowess the Pats are putting on for us, I've been thinking about the draft pick we're likely to get from the 49ers.
Could be number one.
A lot of people are talking about it right now. He says, if things stand now, we get the second overall pick in the draft from them. With the way they're playing, I'm thinking top four is a safe bet. I would agree with that. And I just don't see the Pats wanting to give a rookie the kind of money that early pick commands. What do you think the market for an early pick will be, considering in that last couple of years teams have had trouble getting value? Well, I think, frankly, a rookie in that particular instance is going to see the value of his coming onto a team and a chance to win and win right away. I don't really see the money as being an overwhelming factor. The Patriots will probably offer what might be commensurate with that particular position if they decide to keep the pick.
Right. Now, the money is a major factor, and I think I think if the Patriots have a top four pick, now, it's hard to say who the top guys are going to be and whatever. I think it's an opportunity to get a blue-chip guy, probably the best guy at whatever position, you know, they deem necessary. And, yeah, you're going to have to pay him, but how rarely are the Patriots in this position, okay? It's overall a good thing when you're drafting in the late 20s and 30s because that means you've had a pretty darn good year. Every now and then, if you have an opportunity to take a top five guy, money aside, you might have to do it because you can't get those guys all that often. Now, I think that until that selection is made, the chance of them trading is always going to be there because they, you know, they can get good value for it. They could get a lower first-round pick and maybe a first-round pick next year. And you may have, let's say, you know, quarterback du jour is sitting there at number two, and there are four teams who are in desperate need of quarterback who draft in the teens or whatever. They might make such an offer that the Patriots can't refuse, and they go for it. But right. I think it's an opportunity to take a blue-chip guy that you might not generally, annually... have a shot at. And, you know... Let's face it. One thing that they're going to need is youth and athleticism on defense, specifically at linebacker. If there's a guy, and let's face it, we know that linebacker is a tough position for the Patriots to draft because we've seen guys come in and out, and it's hard to grasp this 3-4 defensive system. Let's say they find the guy who they deem to be the perfect guy for this system coming out of college, and they have a chance to get him at number 3 overall. You might have to do it.
But if that player is not worth the overall third pick in the draft, I definitely think you see the Patriots trade down.
Was Logan Mankins the worth a first-round pick? You know, I mean, at the time.
Well, he is now.
No, he is now. But I'm saying you don't, you know, they probably could have gotten Logan Mankins later, or they maybe could have gotten a guard who will end up being pretty good later on in the draft. But, you know, you get a guy that you think is perfect for your system. Now, I'm not saying that they're going to reach for a second-round caliber guy at third overall, but if there's a guy who, you know, Mel Kiper ranks as the 10th best prospect, but the Patriots have a chance to get him third because that's where they find this guy mm-hmm. to be, a third best guy, right. You know, you got to go for it. Let's, you know, I mean, I think it's going to make for a really intriguing couple of,
Absolutely.
You know, 6 weeks to 2 months leading up to that. And I'll tell you what. It's going to be number two. I think the Niners are the second worst team in the league. And you know, I don't think the
Super Bowl champion team having the second pick of the draft.
And now the Niners do have two wins. So it would take, you know, the Dolphins to win at least two games and the Niners, you know, to lose all their rest. But you think about games like Pittsburgh and the Jets the other day. Pittsburgh helped the Patriots by losing.
Sure.
In the sense that the Jets now have an extra win.
Mm-hmm.
And that might might change the draft order.
I know.
You know.
It's possible. I think that's a good point.
Unbelievable.
Alex says, who the heck thought this was a primetime game, Buffalo and New England? Does having a lot of night games affect a team in any way? Well, other than the fact that Belichick's kind of moaning about having three straight night games, I heard him yesterday on Patriots Monday.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, he was kind of like, yeah, whoever thought this schedule was brilliant. Well, the NFL sets this, number one. And number two, the NFL wants them on there because they feel like people will watch the Patriots whether they like them or they hate them because they are in the process of making history.
Well, first of all, a team is only the maximum a team can be on primetime is 6. So they don't have to worry about any more than 6. 6 is a lot. They don't have to worry about any more than 6.
Well, and how many have they had then?
This is 6. Once they play Baltimore, they are scheduled
once
right now
Once they play
now,
Baltimore on Monday night, that's 6.
Right.
Okay.
They were originally scheduled
That's why
for
the
5.
Steelers game wasn't moved to night. It was moved to afternoon.
To 4 o'clock.
So it could be the second half of the national doubleheader.
And once NBC decided to keep Patriots-Eagles, keep in mind, up until 2 weeks ago, or up until last week, NBC had the opportunity, if they wanted, to move Patriots-Eagles to afternoon and move something else into the night slot, which would have opened up the possibility of making Patriots-Steelers, Patriots-Jets, or Patriots-Dolphins a night game. The thinking being that, well, maybe the Patriots are going to be 14-0 going into that Patriots-Dolphins game. Let's make that a primetime game.
Well,
whatever the thinking was.
The Giants game is a primetime game.
Giants game is
but
locked
it's also,
in.
It's also an NFL Network
right,
game.
Right, locked in. But that's included in the 6. The 6 doesn't just mean Sunday right. night. It's Saturday, Sunday, or Monday, or Thursday, I think, as well. So I think that the decision to make Patriots-Bills a national game was purely the appeal or what they think is the appeal of the Patriots and watching history. I don't think, you know, I'm sure they realize that there's a chance this is going to be a blowout and wouldn't be a good matchup, but NBC's probably thinking, well, even if it's a blowout at halftime, people still want to see Patriots and Moss in the second half. They want to see what this offense, what this defense can do and see history in progress. I think that was part of the decision in making that a night game. I didn't think it was going to be a compelling game, and it wasn't. I think that, you know, NBC sees this as being a team for better or worse, or you like them or hate them, that people want to see. And, you know, they're going to get to see them again.
Sam sends an email and says, it's ridiculous that Heath Evans and Kyle Eckel were making bigger runs than Lawrence Maroney. Maybe he's hurt. Maybe he's just not an aggressive runner. One way or the other, I'm delusional to think that he will be the featured back for the next decade. I hate to say this, but Lawrence Maroney is a nice little player. I made the comment earlier that I'm beginning to have real doubts about Lawrence Maroney and his durability, and I can't say that I totally disagree with what Sam is saying right here, which is why I think they also, if they decide to keep that high draft pick, should give serious consideration to a guy like McFadden from Arkansas.
No, I think that's all good points, and I think with Maroney, he's done nothing through a year and two-thirds to show that he's anything other than a durable, you know,
a guy who can share the job. He's not a guy who can take it over himself. He's a job-sharing person is what
right.
he is.
And one thing, you know, that would play into his favor is the fact that the trend, it seems, in the NFL is you want to have two reliable running backs.
No problem.
You
know, no problem with that. But we need another one.
Right. We need another one. If he is one of the two, you still can't rely on him.
I mean, no.
Reliability. I mean, that is dependability is a word that Belichick brings up a lot.
And, it is what
you know,
it is.
He'd rather have a B-plus player at a certain position who he knows he can rely on day in and day out to be that B-plus player, as opposed to the guy who is A-plus on one day, C-minus the next, B, F, A.
Right.
You know, he wants the guy who you can depend on. And, you know, listen, is it Lawrence Maroney's fault that he gets injured a lot? It might not be. I don't know what his workout tendencies are and all that. I don't know if it's something he could avoid, getting hurt all the time. But the bottom line is, I think this is his fourth different body part that's been hurt in a year and a half being with the Patriots. So it's something to be concerned about. I think he's very talented. I think he's explosive. We just haven't seen that explosiveness often enough. And I'll tell you, you know, as long as this passing game is working the way it is, they might be able to get by in the short term with just Heath Evans and Kyle Eckel, because keep in mind, Kevin Faulk went out with a head injury. You know, maybe that's a concussion. Maybe that's something that keeps him on the sidelines for a week or two. But, you know, they're going to need Lawrence Maroney between now and, you know, potentially February. I mean,
sure,
they're going to need him to be reliable and productive.
He also says Moss's post-game interview with Andrea Kramer was sounding like a confession. He looked almost like an orphan who had just found a home. If the Pats pay him $4 to $5 million a year, he'll retire and go into the Hall of Fame as a Patriot. I won't disagree with that.
In the last 36 hours, he has called Bill Belichick the greatest coach he's ever seen, and Bill Belichick has called Randy Moss
the greatest receiver. Yeah.
I mean, I think that tells you all you need to know.
Yep.
Bill Belichick is not a guy who outwardly...
who lashes superlatives on anybody.
I don't even think he said that about Tom Brady.
No.
I, you know, when I heard him say that, that's as over the top as it gets from Belichick.
Which ought to be a pretty good clue as to where these two guys think about each other and what you really think the Moss's chances of sticking around for next year would be.
Yeah.
James in Roanoke Rapids, North Carolina. Why is the national media so quick to give Peyton Manning the excuse of losses and injuries of key players as the reason he and the offense are not playing that well the last 2 weeks? All they keep saying is once the injured Colts players get healthy, then they'll be able to match up with the Patriots. Why can't they just say what it really is? Without his security blankets, Manning is not able to carry the team like Brady was when the Patriots had their losses and injuries.
Yeah, by the way, Dwight Freeney not coming back. So.
I know.
Sucks to be him right now. I think a lot of it, too, is, you know, Peyton Manning's body language when he's not doing well and guys are going down. I mean, that San Diego game, I mean, he has the demeanor of a guy who is making excuses or is upset at his teammates for not doing well. Well, when Aaron Moorhead doesn't do well, what are you going to do? I mean, that's who you got, and he might not be Marvin Harrison, but you know, it's not doing him or the team any favors when you're moping around the sidelines, as it seems like Peyton Manning sometimes does. The difference is Tom Brady and the Patriots overcome those injuries much better than the Colts have been. And, you know, they go with who they got, and they win with who they got. That's what they're able to do, and Manning still has to prove that. Manning's been lucky in his career. His offensive threats, for the most part, have been healthy, have been reliable, have been in there every week. Now we're seeing maybe his true color. I mean, we're seeing, you know, what he is able to do when he's got to work with spare parts and different guys week in and week out. I mean, we've seen what Brady and the Patriots, you know, they might not win the Super Bowl every year with these spare parts, but, you know, they're going to get the job done.
Sure.
For the most part. So, you know, excuse making for Manning, I mean, I have no, you know, I don't think too many people here have too much sympathy for this.
None.
None.
Dan in Charlottesville, Virginia. Why is it that everyone thinks trying to convert a fourth down with a lead is rubbing it in? To decide to punt the ball or attempt a field goal is not supposed to be a concession to defeat on the drive. It is, like every other play, a team can run throughout the game designed to help your team. It seems like every team the Patriots beat down, every sports writer in America, every stupid fan that calls in to radio shows thinks that the right thing to do is just give the ball away when the opposing defense finally stops the offense from getting 10 yards in three plays. He also goes on to say, I can't wait to see them finish the season with an average point differential of 25-plus points because that, to me, will depict just how perfectly the Pats have trained, prepared, and executed the game of football.
Here's what should be much, much, much more of a talking point for Tuesday morning quarterback and anybody else who wants to nitpick about how the Patriots are running up the score at the fourth down plays. Fourth and one, 8:56 left in the game. The Patriots are up 35-7, and they go for it from the Buffalo 3 and score a touchdown, okay? 2.5 minutes later for the Buffalo Bills, they're down 42-7. Fourth and seven at the Patriots 34, okay? You are in the opposing territory. Fourth and seven at the 34, middle of the third quarter, you're down by 35 points, and you kick a 50-plus yard field goal. That to me should be what we're talking about. How does Dick Geron send that message to his team? They didn't go for it on fourth and seven in opposition territory down by 35. That was giving up on the game. Now, was the game over? Obviously. 35 points, that would have been a miraculous comeback. The Bills once had a miraculous comeback 15 years ago against Houston, right?
Yes, correct.
I mean, I don't remember exactly what the score was. How do you not go for it on fourth and seven in the middle of the third quarter when you're down by... If you have any shot to win the game, any...
I think they were down 28. I think it was like 31-3,
okay.
Something like that.
If
Are you kidding me?
If, yeah. Well done. If Dick Geron and the Buffalo Bills have any chance to win this game, they're going for it on fourth and seven at the 34. If they don't make it, then the Patriots have the ball on the 34. And, you know, they're probably going to score. They're probably going to score in their next possession either way. How do you kick a field goal there? What does 42-10 do for you?
Nothing.
It does nothing. It barely makes a dent in the scoring. And you're telling the players that, you know what, we're not going to attempt to get seven more points. We're going to settle for three. I mean, that was a joke to me. I think that should be what the Buffalo... You know, I was at the stadium, and I heard the chant. I mean, I don't know how well you could hear it over TV when the Bills fans are chanting an expletive towards the Patriots when they went for it on fourth and one. They should have been chanting even more vociferously at Dick Geron and the Bills sideline when they didn't go for it on fourth and seven. That to me was a joke. I don't know how you can kick a field goal there.
Dave in Spring Hill, Florida. I've been a Pats fan for a long time. This year is so cool. We're living history. As for the Eagles, I don't think the spread is high enough. 22? Is it really 22?
Is it? I didn't see it today.
Is the spread 22?
Although I did see something God. The other day. Was it John Tomasi actually that had an item about maybe it was in the Sunday paper about historically what the largest spreads in NFL history are, and you know 24, 25 something mm-hmm. is. And speculating that maybe this year for the Patriots.
We could actually see, and that's exactly what Dave says. He says, could we actually later this year see 30 or 35 points as a spread?
Yeah. You know, that's a lot of
points. That's staggering.
That's staggering. But
that's something that if we do see it, you're not going to see again. And I feel fairly confident in making that statement.
Yeah.
That could be something that you truly will never see again.
If you know if the Dolphins are 0-14 and you know
the Patriots are 14-0,
the Patriots are 14-0 and the Dolphins, you know, they're already cleaning out their lockers and the vehicles in the player parking lot down in Miami.
Somebody could get hurt.
And you know I think that's the
especially the bookies.
Yeah, right. That's exactly right. Well, looking for a soundbite.
Exactly.
I think that's the fear is you know when the Patriots that's the one thing with this you know. Patriots having all their starters on the field late in games and all that. And they haven't, though. I mean, in the fourth quarter, you know, the only drive that they really had was a Matt Cassel drive in the fourth quarter. You know, all it really would take is one player, and we've brought this up, you've brought this up before, all it really takes is one player on, say, the Jets or the Dolphins to decide, you know what, I've had it, and go after a Patriots player.
That's what you run the risk of.
You run that risk. But you know what? I mean, you can't play with that in mind. You can't set up your lineups and your – players with that in mind.
Tony in Greenwich, Connecticut says, and also chimes in on the Maroney thing. He says, I know it sounds silly to be concerned about anything with this great team, but I'm nervous about our ability to run when we need to run. Seems to me like Bill is saving Maroney, that he didn't want to risk injury in a game where he's not needed to win. Is this plausible?
Well, what's certainly plausible is that Maroney actually did have a foot injury, which is, you know, and they announced him as having a foot injury and probable to return. What is highly plausible is he had that foot injury. If needed and the game had higher stakes and it was closer, then he'd come in and suck it up with the foot injury. But the safest course in this particular instance was, you know what, we've got some guys that we can still handle the load with Heath Evans and Kyle Eckel, and just in case this turns out to be something that's more serious, we're going to keep him on the sideline. I don't think there's anything wrong with that, and I think that should be standard operating procedure for this and any other team. If a guy has a mild injury and you don't need him in that particular instance, why risk it? Now, on the other side of things was Teddy Bruschi, who went out with an injury that was never announced, but you could see he got hit. It seemed like, I think he actually got hit by Junior Seau. They were tackling a Bills player, and he was on the sideline for a little while, and the first time that he came back was on special teams. Now, he didn't have an injury. They didn't announce anything, and it must have just been precaution that he even came out in the first place. But if he had any nick at all, you know, why is he going on special teams? You know, why are they using him on special teams? That might be a valid question, but...
Dave in Abington, Virginia, out of all the 18 teams that have gone 10-0, like the Patriots are one now, only five of them won the Super Bowl. So they need to play 100% of the way in order to win the Super Bowl. Obviously, that's a very good point.
Yeah.
Just because you're 10-0 doesn't automatically mean you're going to go ahead and win.
No.
Says, if the players are on the field, they should do the best they can. Do you want them to take a knee for the entire fourth quarter? Obviously not.
No. No, not looking for taking a knee. And, you know, listen, their only fourth quarter drive went like this. Evans up the middle. Evans right guard. Evans up the middle. Evans right guard. Castle third down pass to Evans. Eckel right guard. Evans up the middle. Castle short pass. Eckel, and then a punt.
Yeah.
They didn't take a knee, but, you know, that's what you do when you're ahead by a lot. You just run, and, you know, let the clock, you know, wind the clock up, you know, let the clock go. I mean, they had a drive that ended up being a punt, and it took 7 minutes. That's a perfect drive when you're up 56-10. You know, you take time off the clock. You're not passing the ball all over the place and setting up a receiver to get, you know, clocked by a defensive back. You give the ball to your big guys, you know, Evans and Eckel, let them run. You know, so that, you know, I think that's what you do. You don't literally take a knee. You just run the ball up the middle and let the time go.
Exactly.
You know?
Let's do this. Let's take a timeout. We'll see if we can bring in Russell Baxter from ESPN. Let him contribute to the program as well. Want to give us an idea of what's coming up on Patriots today?
Talking a little bit about Adalis Thomas today and a little bit of a mini resurgent game for him. You know, had a couple of sacks, and after going four or five games with not too many, you know, playmaking moments, he and James Sanders were both playmakers and starting to take a look at the Eagles on this short week.
Beautiful.
All right, John?
Happy Thanksgiving.
Hey, you too.
All right. Time out to take. Russell Baxter from ESPN NFL Research Coordinator joins us coming up inside the playbook.
He's been a three-time champion, two-time Super Bowl MVP, and kicked off 2007 on a record pace.
Three touchdown passes in the first half.
Now, Tom Brady has signed official Patriots mini replica helmets, and you can get one free. Exclusively from the New England Patriots, this authentic mini helmet comes complete with chin strap, face mask, and Tom Brady's autograph. Perfect for every Patriots fan. To take advantage of this incredible one-of-a-kind offer, all you need to do is make qualifying transactions on your Bank of America Patriots Extra Points Visa card. Plus, with your card, you'll earn Patriots extra points redeemable for once-in-a-lifetime Patriots experiences, pregame field passes, memorabilia, merchandise, tickets, and much more. Don't wait. Apply at PatriotsExtraPoints.com or call 1-800-NFL-9929 to get your Bank of America Patriots extra points Visa card and a free official mini replica helmet autographed by Tom Brady. Patriots extra points, because fans want contact too. Autographed mini helmet limited to those making a qualifying purchase. See details at PatriotsExtraPoints.com.
All right, Jimmy, it's the big day, and we gotta go. Patriots kick off in an hour. Let's make sure we got everything.
All right, let's see. Face paint.
Check.
Helmets.
Check.
Foam fingers.
Check.
Jerseys.
Check.
Checks.
Check.
Check card.
Check.
That's everything.
Let's go, Pats!
Woo!
Let's go, Pats! Let's go, Pats! Let's go!
Check, check, check.
That's right. If you really are a true Patriots fan, then you need to open a New England Patriots checking account from Bank of America today. You'll get checks, check cards, and even bank statements, all with the official New England Patriots logo. Bank of America is the official bank of the New England Patriots. So take advantage of this opportunity to make every day game day.
Let's go Pats!
And sign up for a New England Patriots checking account today. Bank of America. Bank of Opportunity.
Bank of America N.A. member FDIC. New England Patriots trademarks, including the Patriots logo, are the property of New England Patriots L.P. and are used pursuant to a licensing agreement with New England Patriots L.P. 2007 Bank of America Corporation. All rights reserved.
Well, it's that time of year again where Sunday means you're doing something football. Whether it's tailgating in the parking lot, throwing the pigskin around, or just hanging in and watching the game on the tube, it's all about football. And when you're not watching football or playing football, well, I think we both know you're thinking football. And all that can make you a little hungry. That's why there's the tasty snack wrap from McDonald's. Snack wraps now come in your choice of three flavors. New Chipotle barbecue, honey mustard, and ranch. And they're available with grilled or crispy chicken. Delicious and easy to eat. It's the perfect game time snack. So grab one today. And when you do, if you're looking at that chicken select and it kind of reminds you of a quarterback in the middle of the pocket, except now he's surrounded by cheddar jack cheese, ranch sauce, and lettuce, well, maybe you're thinking just a little too much about football. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
When you've got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, First Down Franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mile and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, First Down Franks, and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Food Master, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's, and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine, and Associate Grocers of New England, and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
And we welcome you back inside Patriots Playbook for a Tuesday Thanksgiving week. John Rook here with you in hour number two, and let's welcome in the NFL Research Coordinator for ESPN, ESPN.com, and all things from the worldwide leader, Russell Baxter. Hey, Russell.
John, how are you?
Happy Thanksgiving.
How was your trip to Puerto Rico?
It was excellent. Thank you for asking. Thank you for asking. It didn't go so well for the Friars in the championship game, but nevertheless, it was a great week.
Oh, excellent. Did you make it to the Westin Rio Mar?
No. Did not.
Okay.
I rarely.
You probably saved yourself some money.
Well.
they have some of our honeymoon money down there.
It depends on how you term saving money.
Gambling.
I saved some money for a casino. I saved some money for the pool bar at the place where we stayed. I saved some money for some of the shops in Old San Juan. How's that?
Well, that's called balance offense.
Yeah.
That's what that's called.
No, it's also called letting the wife do what she wants to do. You know, and you understand that principle, I guess.
Yes. Well, and I found out that firsthand when I did have my honeymoon down there. So
there you go. But I had a great time. You know, in fact, I think that some of what we were talking about last week, I thought that Puerto Rico is vastly underrated as a Caribbean destination.
Well, it's got some. I think it has a little bit of everything.
Yep.
That's the thing I liked about it. When we were at the resort we were at, like I said, the Westin Rio Mar, you got to love a hammock near the beach. You got to love poolside service.
Yep.
Which we have. I mean, we have that in Bristol, but it's only certain times of the year. So
that's right. We were at the Condado Plaza, right there on the Condado Strip on the north tip of the island, and they actually had a lot of construction going on, but the place that it's going to actually be finished when they're done is spectacular.
If the Friars couldn't win, at least you did.
Yes, absolutely.
Actually, they look at
and
it
up on the plus side for the week, so that's always a good thing too, right?
That's called turnover differential.
Yeah, turnover differential.
Yes.
Is there anything about this Patriots football team right now that surprises you or that can surprise you? I mean, other than the fact that if they actually lost, it might be surprising. But, I mean, it just seems like, you know, every week almost they outdo themselves. And I called it a little bit early in the program today, Russell. I said, there's no poor sportsmanship involved here, realistically speaking, what some are writing about. What it is you've got a perfect offensive storm that the Patriots are putting into play every week that nobody has seen, maybe ever, in offensive football history in the NFL.
Well, yeah, you can't argue with that. And, you know, here was an instance. See, I always go back to the game in Miami where my question mark came about when Bill Belichick pulled Tom Brady out of the game. The Dolphins scored two quick touchdowns, and he put Brady back in. That was not the case Sunday night. He played Tom Brady. Played him as long as he wanted him to play. Issue was not in doubt. Took him out of the game, and he never came back. So to say we're, you know, every time the Patriots win big, we can't just keep on throwing out running up the score. Mm-hmm. You know, it gets to the point whereas if there was that instance earlier in the year, then by saying it every week, it becomes a moot point and so on. So I didn't see that at all this week. I just saw a lot of flawless execution by the New England Patriots, who continue to keep Tom Brady's jersey very clean, who continue to get different contributions from guys on defense every week. Probably Adelius Thomas's best game of the year so far. The Moss-Brady combination, which is just magnificent to watch because they do it so many different ways. They can hit you long, hit you underneath. The athletic ability, I mean, Randy even looks better than he did in his heyday with Minnesota right now.
I agree with that, by the way.
Yeah.
If
you remember, his heyday in Minnesota, and it was full of highlights, there was a lot of the streaking down the field, down the sidelines, down the middle of the field. I think you're seeing a lot more athleticism out of Randy Moss this year in terms of the leaping catches, the positioning and so on. This is even a different Randy Moss, and I don't mean a different Randy Moss from the last couple of years in Oakland and, you know, maybe one year in Minnesota. This is a different Randy Moss, I think, than we've ever seen in his career.
Well, what it is you've got a motivated Randy Moss. He's obviously motivated to win. He may still be motivated somewhat to play for a contract for next year, but, you know, it's very rare, and we just brought this up a short while ago around here, but it's very rare that you see a guy like Moss, when he was interviewed by Andrea Kramer, you know, after the game on Sunday night, was talking about how Bill Belichick is the greatest coach he's ever played for, and then less than 24 hours later, Belichick himself said Randy Moss is the best receiver he's ever coached. There's a mutual admiration society going on here that I don't think either person, either party, wants to end this relationship. And I think it's a huge sign, a big sign, and as good a sign as any to say that Randy Moss will be back next year.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's – listen, Randy Moss has been one of those wide receivers that we have basically watched everything he did and, you know, probably even more so than Terrell Owens. And I say it for this reason. You know, when Owens came into the league in 1996, John, it's the third-round pick out of Tennessee Chattanooga. He emerged as a star. Randy Moss came into the league before he came into the league in 1998. Everybody already knew who he was, and probably for all the wrong reasons. At Marshall, I believe he was at Florida State and left there for assorted reasons.
Right.
So Randy Moss was the more known commodity. Even though, you know, Terrell Owens has kind of been the guy in recent years more steadily, you know, Randy was on the verge of his career kind of falling off the map. But we have watched Randy year in and year out, everything he does and so on. There's no doubt in your mind that this is a different person as well. And I don't sense from him any kind of motivated by money instance. It sounds like motivated by winning. Now, I could be have blinders on and so on. There's tone and demeanor in his voice there's a maturity in his voice that I don't think we have seen before. Mm-hmm. And for some guys, it takes longer. Maybe this is Randy Moss's finest hour. Okay?
Yeah.
I don't know if we've gotten to Terrell Owens's finest hour yet. Because his tendency has always been to, you know, blame someone else when something has gone wrong.
Sure.
And so on. I think Randy has been more of a moper at times, for lack of a better word. And some of Randy's antics have been, you know, walking off a field or fake mooning or different things like that. This looks like a different person when you see him interviewed by Andrea Kramer. When you see, you know, the words that are coming out of his mouth and the words that are coming out of Bill Belichick's mouth. This is a different – this is a Randy Moss we don't know.
Right.
And I don't mean that as a player. I mean that maybe as a person. Now, I'm also making that observation from afar and so on. But it's the only thing I can really go on. And this is a totally different Randy Moss. I don't know how to any other way to put it. If you didn't know who Randy Moss was beforehand, you would think this was – a very well-rounded receiver who seemed to have his head on straight.
Absolutely. Russell, shall we talk about some Thanksgiving football today?
Since we
have a chance
to
do that? I know. I mean, I always love – first of all, Thanksgiving Day is one of my favorite days for obvious reasons. You have a chance to be with family, you know, and whether or not it's a large one or a small one, and you get a chance to basically relax and watch football, which is – Thanksgiving is one of those football holidays that always comes into mind. Thanksgiving, maybe, and New Year's Day, to me, are the biggest football days that are out there. And I realize people say, well, Super Bowl Sunday. But I'm talking about in terms of the number of the games and maybe even the quality of the games. Now – for the first
time.
Well,
here's the other thing about Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
And more, there's no debate on what Thanksgiving is, okay? For people who celebrate Christmas,
mm-hmm.
Christmas is gift giving. It is religious. It means a lot of things to a lot of people.
Sure.
Thanksgiving means one thing and one thing only.
Football.
Football, and here I come to the table.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, we give thanks right. for what we have in this country, obviously.
Right. There's
but there's not
a Nutrisystem Thanksgiving, if
no.
you know what I mean.
No, it doesn't exist.
Okay.
And the fact, the first game on the table really is one of the best first games I think we've had maybe in a long, long time with Green Bay playing at Detroit. I'm actually looking forward to watching Detroit's Thanksgiving game.
Yeah, it should be really interesting. And let me it's before we jump ahead, I'm going to jump back for a second.
Okay.
Which is always one of the things I always love when people look at the NFL schedule way, way, way in advance and anticipate what we anticipate and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So we dig this thing out in late March, early April,
yeah.
and we see what we have for Thanksgiving, John.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Green Bay, Detroit. How do we feel about that in April?
Ugh.
And then we have Jets, Dallas.
I'm thinking, well, you know, okay, maybe.
Two playoff teams?
Yeah,
from a year
right,
ago,
right,
that.
Yeah.
And then we have Indianapolis at Atlanta.
And we're thinking, oh, my God, what a great matchup
yeah,
that night.
Michael
what
Vick,
what,
Peyton Manning.
Yeah, what a great dessert to the day, right?
Now, I would safe to say we went from 3-2-1 to 1-2-3.
Oh, absolutely. And exactly in that order.
Right, exactly. And I just find it funny on that note because, you know, some of us, thought the Packers would win the NFC North this year. I can proudly say that. Nobody thought Detroit, except for John Kitna, maybe,
mm-hmm.
would be what they were. And we're still not sure exactly what Detroit is. But the Packers have a head of steam right now. It's not necessarily one of their favorite places to play, Detroit. You know, Brett Favre, including playoffs, 23-9 versus the Lions.
Wow.
All nine losses at Detroit.
Really?
Yes.
So, wow.
the Lions have never beaten Brett Favre in Green Bay / Milwaukee, and the Lions where they play the last game of the season, which is what makes this great, is who knew when we saw the schedule beginning of the year that Lions Packers would be be played twice in the last 6 weeks,
mm-hmm.
and these would be the two teams vying for the division title. Now, of course, Green Bay sitting with a 3-game lead with 6 games to play, and they seem to be getting better on a weekly basis. I think their biggest concern here is they've got an interesting 2-game stretch. And fortunately for them, their next game is also a Thursday as well. But Detroit flies around on defense. Detroit's pretty good at picking up takeaways. They're also pretty bad at hanging on to the football.
Mm-hmm.
So I anticipate this being a very entertaining game. You know, we have times seen Brett Favre go in there and throw 2, 3, 4 interceptions. This is not the same quarterback this year, being much more careful with the football. And meanwhile, the Lions, who were sitting 6-2 a couple weeks ago, now dropped two games in a row. And Tom Jackson made a great point on our Sunday show the other day. At 6-4, and with 6 wins, this would be a hell of a season for the Detroit Lions. Would you not agree?
Yeah, I would say it'd be certainly
given
a step
they've lost
the right
10
direction.
Games in a row.
Right, sure.
The previous 6 years.
Right.
But the fact that all anybody can remember is that John Kitna said this team would win 10 games this year is now everybody's frantic to see that if they don't get the 10 wins or even 9 wins, that the season may rank as a disappointment. So it'll be interesting to see what version we get. Green Bay, like I said, I think has a lot of more momentum. I think they play smarter football than the Detroit Lions. And please, I know that juggernaut Lions running game rebounded from minus 18 yards to a whopping 25 yards in the span of 1 week. But if Mike March's offense does not establish a little balance, John Kitten is in for a very, very long afternoon on Turkey Day.
I think that's probably a fair assessment.
The Detroit Lions in 2 weeks have run for 7 yards.
Yeah, net, right?
Yes. I mean, minus 18 yards rushing, John, when you get ready for Thanksgiving on Thursday and you accidentally fall down the cellar steps backwards, that's how you get minus 18 yards rushing. But he got 25 this week. So.
I also get a pretty good bump on the head.
We're
myself.
Making strides.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's a pretty good bump on the head as well.
No doubt about that. The Jets and Cowboys, as you suggested, certainly before the season started, it looked like it would be an awesome, awesome Thanksgiving Day matchup. And, of course, for the Cowboys, they need to do what they can to protect a potential home field advantage, get a little bit closer maybe even to a division championship with what the Giants do notwithstanding. But for the Jets, it's another chance just to play spoiler, considering that's what they did to the Pittsburgh Steelers this last week.
Yeah, and, take advantage of that bye week. Came out and played some very, very smart football. And that's why you can't look for any team in this league, maybe the exception of the Patriots. That's the thing about the Patriots, they don't look ahead to anyone. Anybody can beat anybody in this league at any time. That's just how it is. And that's why, you look at Miami this year, and I know they're 0-10. I understand they're 0-10. But they seem like they find a different way to lose a game every week. The last 3 weeks, the Dolphins, I'm segueing here, held their opponents to 13, 13, and 17 points, and yet now they can't score. Early in the year, it was the other way around. I bring up that point because the New York Jets, who played very aggressive defense this week, will have to play a similar style against the Dallas Cowboys. Now, the New York Jets secondary, a little up and down this year. They've had their moments. Their biggest liability has been run defense, but they played very good run defense this week, and they did a great job of corralling Ben Roethlisberger. I mean, the Jets came into that game with 9 sacks and got 7
right
against the Steelers.
Okay.
Now, sacking Romo's, again, like Roethlisberger, guy you can move outside. But, you got Brady Moss in New England. Right now, you got Romo Owens, 4 touchdown performance last week. To me, Green Bay and Dallas are on a collision course for that game a week from Thursday,
mm-hmm.
which would be sweet if they were both 10-1.
Yeah,
and I probably anticipate they both will be. So
I would think so. The Indianapolis-Atlanta game, while certainly it looked intriguing back in April, I think has intrigued for a little bit different respect this week. I hope and pray, just from a pure football perspective, that we don't dwell a heck of a lot on Michael Vick going to jail this week. But at the same time, it's going to be a subject matter. And the Colts, quite frankly, they struggled this last week at home with Kansas City. So I'm beginning to wonder what we might expect.
I think what Tony Dungy was looking at this past week was this 5-day window. I mean, obviously the Colts have a lot of injuries, and every team's got injuries, so
right.
That's not an excuse. But the fact that he had the short week, I think Tony was looking, he'll be happy to win 13-10 again this week. And, there was a lot about the end of that game against Kansas City. John, you've been, covering the Patriots for a while. Adam Vinatieri doesn't miss 4 field goals in a row.
No, he doesn't. That was pretty shocking.
And, a lot was made that at the end of the game last week, Tony Dungy was really running down that clock so he could get Vinatieri back on there so he could kick a game-winning field goal and get his confidence back. I beg to differ. I believe the reason that Tony Dungy wound that clock down the way he did for minimal time was protect the one area of the Colts that has been abysmal, even when healthy. And that would be their kick coverage units. And I think that was evidenced when, after kicking the field goal and there were still 4 seconds left,
mm-hmm.
Vinatieri kicked the ball as a squib kick. As it turned out, it went out of bounds, and the Chiefs actually got a shot for a downfield pass, which they couple laterals and they never got there as far as a touchdown. But that's a big concern for Tony Dungy, is giving up touchdowns via the special teams. That's really how they lost to San Diego. They gave up a punt return and a kickoff return in the first quarter of that game. And if you go back to the New England game, you know, Wes Welker, who can return a ball on anyone, a lot of his returns really changed the tide of that game. So the injuries are affecting Tony Dungy's team in a lot of different ways, more so on special teams units, for special teams units that have been shaky to begin with, even when they won the Super Bowl last year. Remember, they gave up the opening kickoff to Devin Hester for a touchdown, mm-hmm. which is the first time in the history of the Super Bowl a team had done that. So I think Tony Dungy's and the Colts' approach here is to get out of Dodge with a win, and then they get 10 days to rest up and hopefully get the people back that they know are coming back. We know Dwight Freeney's not coming back, and it's hard to tell whether Marvin Harrison is as well.
Right. All right, as far as the Sunday schedule is concerned, I don't know what intrigues you, but can I kind of throw one out there that
Absolutely.
May come as a surprise in terms of intrigue? I actually think that I'd be interested to see what happens here. Houston at Cleveland. And simply because what Cleveland has done over the last few weeks at 6-4, they're in position now to make big strides for themselves and play themselves right into a primo spot in the playoffs. Houston Texans are only game back at 5-5.
What a great division the AFC South has turned out to be.
It's been a very good battle.
Right. I mean, think about it. Houston is 5-5. Unfortunately for them, they're not going to win the division, not only because of the teams ahead of them, but three of their losses are all in the division and lost. You know, they lost a nail-biter kind of to the Colts. They lost a heartbreaker of all sort with 8 field goals at home to Tennessee after they made a great rally, and they got manhandled by Jacksonville. But outside the division, they've been a lot better, and I think some people were surprised at what they did to the New Orleans Saints this week in terms of defense. And let's just say something, because even though it was a year ago, and it's still, in some cases, too early to tell, do you think we can get off some people's cases? And I think I got tired of more not hearing the Texans criticized,
okay.
but more so the young man criticized. I guess Mario Williams is doing okay
yeah.
with the Texans.
Yeah.
And I guess Reggie Bush isn't ready to go to the Hall of Fame quite yet.
No.
So I found it interesting that Mario, 6 tackles, a sack, and a forced fumble, had a pretty outstanding game. And Gary Kubiak is definitely making some strides there. Having Andre Johnson back certainly helps Houston back as well, and they got Matt Shaw back as week. This is an intriguing game. What makes it intriguing is Cleveland's defense, which is virtually non-existent. When the Baltimore Ravens somehow manage to get 30 points on the board against you these days, that's interesting. But John, you can appreciate this. The old cardiac kids
yeah.
of Brian Sipe,
right.
Dave Logan,
right.
Mike Pruitt, they were fun teams back in the day.
I hated those teams.
Yeah, but they were fun, weren't they?
Well, yeah, they were fun to watch, but that's why I hated them.
Because Sam Ritigliano is the
yeah,
head coach.
Yeah, right, right.
But they become that. Think about their, I want to say, their is it their last 3 games now against Seattle in overtime with the field goal?
Yeah.
Pittsburgh comes down to a missed field goal.
Right.
And then we're still trying to figure out
what happened
this
to Baltimore.
Field goal.
Yeah, right.
Which, of course, the league will probably do something about that. And by the way, I hear people screaming, why isn't that reviewable? Well, I'm sure they probably didn't even think of it.
Probably never considered having that be reviewable.
Exactly. How many people? The reason I think we're all stunned because we never saw it happen.
Right.
I can't remember the last time
no,
that happened.
I never have. I've
right.
never seen
so,
that.
So, I mean, relax. People, the league will take care of it, okay? They got it right, and that's the most important thing.
That's correct.
They didn't necessarily follow procedure according.
But they did get the call right, and that really should be the bottom line.
Exactly. I know we got 24 hours of sports talk radio to fill, but. All right, everybody take a Valium or two, okay? But this is I like your choice here because I think this is an intriguing team, and I think Cleveland will find a way to win it.
Yeah.
But Houston will be very, very game
yeah.
here. And,
I think it'll be a good game to watch.
You could
yeah.
have, you know, it's not Adrian Peterson, I know, is hurt. And he looked like he was coasting the Rookie of the Year honors.
Mm-hmm.
Depends on how long he's going to be out. Marshawn Lynch has had a nice year. I'll tell you something. Joe Thomas, the rookie tackle up for the Cleveland Browns, has made a huge part of that difference for that team. I mean, they have blown by the number of points and offensive touchdowns they scored a year ago, and we've still got 6 games to go. Like I said, they do have some liabilities on defense, which makes every game a nail-biter one way or the other. And I think Andre Johnson will find some way to get behind that secondary more times than one. But this will be a fun claim. I know it's not the Oilers and the Browns, but I think it'll bring back some some excitement to Cleveland this week. And the Pittsburgh Steelers need to keep an eye on these Cleveland Browns.
Mm-hmm.
Because if Cleveland wins, I'll just throw this out there. If Cleveland wins Sunday, and you're the Pittsburgh Steelers, who might have had their confidence, maybe, I'm guessing. If they didn't get their confidence shaken, they certainly got a wake-up call.
Right, right.
We're now in that stage of the season with the Dolphins that you don't want to be the first team to lose.
No, and of course Miami doesn't want to be the only team not to win.
Exactly.
And of course,
and they will play hard.
They will play hard.
The last six opponents for the Dolphins?
Yeah. Yeah.
Really don't want to be that ominous piece of history.
And you have the Miami-Pittsburgh game on ESPN on Monday night.
Exactly. Yeah. Wasn't a shameless plug, but it was.
Well, it was a nice lead-in. I thought it was a pretty good segue, actually. Pretty good segue. And Pittsburgh, you know, I mean, that's the worst thing, actually. Actually, Pittsburgh losing to the Jets, I think, Russell, might have been a good dose of medicine for the Steelers. I don't think they'll overlook Miami at all now.
Well, I don't think they will either. But it shows you, and I heard this brought up by I'm trying to think one of our analysts who brought it up. It shows you when you have a young coach like you have in Mike Tomlin, who really has a team on a little bit of a roll, especially after two emotional wins in the division and so on. Actually, three straight they played in the division and beat them all. Shows how you got to be up for things. And Aaron Mangini and the Jets really, I think, really outcoached the Steelers this past week.
I would tend to agree with that one. They got to give a little credit where it's due, right?
Yeah, well, it all can't be bad Pittsburgh.
No.
You know, Thomas Jones had a strong day running the ball. They kept the turnovers to a minimum. They did a decent job protecting Kellen Clemens.
Mm-hmm.
And more importantly, with the game, you know, remember, the Jets were down three late in the game, and Kellen Clemens orchestrated a pretty smart drive to get him down there in field goal range.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I guess that kind of leaves us with Philadelphia, New England on Sunday night. Not that we need a terrific amount of analyzation on this one. Fact is that I really don't think Philadelphia has a shot in this one, especially if Donovan McNabb does not play.
Well, that's going to be a big part of this here, if McNabb is available to play. I mean, I would say Philly's only chance, not only with McNabb, is to get the ball and keep the ball in Brian Westbrook's hands. And I don't mean necessarily just runner as well.
But consume the clock with it especially and keep the ball out of Brady's hands.
Exactly. And listen, that is going to be – whoever beats New England, there's going to be two ways to do it. You're going to have a game where New England turns over the ball four or five times, and I don't even know if that'll necessarily do
That's correct.
Because we have seen teams or quarterbacks like the Dallas Cowboys, Tony Romo turned over the ball six times in a game this year and won.
And they still won, right.
And they still won. So, I mean, it certainly can happen. Peyton Manning threw six interceptions and came away.
And still won.
And they didn't win.
Well, I mean, yeah. But had a chance to win. Should have won.
From winning
should
and
have
so
won.
On. So
yeah, right.
That doesn't even guarantee it. There's only one way to get is to keep that offense off the field. But Philly has been erratic, to say the least, especially offensively. Defensively, they would have some intriguing matchups in the secondary for the receivers, the Patriots receivers. In fact, Old Eagle, for at least for 1 year,
mm-hmm.
Dante Stallworth
mm-hmm.
faces his old team
right.
this past week. But I don't know if the rest of defense, you know, the Patriots can nibble underneath. The Eagles are erratic against the run, so you could see some big hits by Maroney and so on. I'm not sure what Philly can do here. Like I said, their only chance is to keep it in Westbrook's hands.
I would agree, 110%. I hope that you and your family have a wonderful Thanksgiving. You don't have to spend the time at work, do you? Do you have the day off?
Oh, absolutely not.
Okay, good.
Absolutely not. We are here today to ensure the latter doesn't happen.
Very nice. Very nice. Glad to hear that. Well, then I guess next week we'll return to our regularly scheduled time and date, if that's all right with you.
Same bat time, same bat channel.
Love it, love it. Happy Thanksgiving, Russell.
You too, John.
Thanks, buddy. Russell Baxter, of course, from ESPN, the NFL research coordinator, who joins us every week here inside the playbook, joining us on a Tuesday because of Thursday's holiday. And again, he'll join us a week from this Thursday for his next scheduled appearance as we get ready for week 13 around the NFL. Before we let you listen in to Coach Belichick, let's see if we can whack out a few more emails. This one comes from Kyle in New York, who says, do you think that these next few games would be a good time to start rotating in guys like Eric Alexander and Pierre Woods, who might be playing a lot more next season? I'm not saying they should sit the starters, but give those guys a few snaps each game so they'll have more game experience come next year. We saw Alexander start in the AFC Championship last year. He got killed. With the Pats crushing teams the way they are, it's the perfect scenario to give them some playing time. First of all, Alexander's banged up right now, so I'm not so sure that that's the case. But I understand what you're saying, Kyle. And in all likelihood, I think, yeah, sure. I think if you get into a situation, you know, this Thursday night or beyond, you know, like, say, against the Jets or the Dolphins or whomever, where you get into the second half, third quarter, and into the fourth quarter with a significant lead, absolutely. I think you could see that kind of a scenario transpire, and you probably should, especially as we get later in the season. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Let's see what else we have now. We have this one from Ed, who says, greetings from Anchorage, Alaska, home of Mark Schlereth. I'm listening to the show online for the first time and think you're doing a great job. The best part of living in Alaska is not having to wait all day for the Pats games. A 1 p.m. kickoff in Foxborough is 9 a.m. here. So I just wake up on Sunday, turn on the telly, and have breakfast in bed with the Pats live. Oh, what a great life that must be, huh? Wake up, turn on the television, Patriots are on. That is pretty cool. Having the NFL on that early. I remember that happened to me when I went to Hawaii a few years ago for a bowl game, the Aloha Bowl in Hawaii, and we woke up on Sunday morning at 8 o'clock. And there's the NFL. Unbelievable! Had breakfast with the National Football League. It's fabulous. Anyway, he says, my question is this. Like Sherman's march to the sea during the Civil War, Coach Belichick's march to the throne of the NFL kingdom this year will be unprecedented. Will this year place him above the lure of Lombardi, or will Spygate keep him forever in the shadows? Should there be a second trophy in his name in recognition of some of the crowning achievement? You know, I think, unfortunately, Ed, Spygate's probably going to put just a tint of tarnish on anything and everything that Bill Belichick does from here on out. He could win six more championships, and maybe some of that tarnish will come off. But I think based on what happened this year, I think there are going to be some, you know, real curmudgeons in the league that will, and curmudgeons in the media as well, that will continue to bring that up and physically force that asterisk, for better or for worse, next to his name. But, I mean, if you're the coach of the greatest team of all time, how can you be denied the accolades? Eventually, I think the history books will look somewhat more kindly upon Coach Belichick. But right away, I'm not so sure that we'll get that from people. Let's see. Jorge, or is it George? One or the other. Jorge in Puerto Rico. Jorge, I was just there. Where were you? I missed you. I was at the Condado. Where were you? Anyway, he says, five questions, please. Is Dante Stallworth staying after the season? Susan, assuming Randy stays. Honestly, I think they're going to end up trying to figure out what Randy Moss does before Stallworth's decision comes into play. That's my own thought. I think Moss's decision comes first. Do they give Asante a new contract? Well, yeah, they'll offer him one, but will it be one that he'll accept? I don't know. I'd have to say I doubt it right now. Is Lawrence Maroney hurt, or are they saving him? I think it's a combination of both. I think because he is somewhat dinged and somewhat fragile, I think that if they don't have to play him, they're not going to. If they get a linebacker, cornerback in the draft, who do they get? Well, your guess is as good as mine in that one. If you're looking for a linebacker, I think you could do a lot worse than the kid Laurinaitis at Ohio State. He says, how did Merriweather and Chad Jackson play? Well, Merriweather's been a fairly constant factor throughout the season. You know, he's still learning, but he's getting some time. Jackson played for the first time really this last week, and it was all in garbage time. So it's really tough to tell. He said, was there some illegal taping stuff in the Broncos-Titans game? Message board rumor. I do not know the answer to that one. And was the Colts dome less loud this week? I know it was a crappy game. Seemed to be honest with you, based on what I saw of the Colts and Chiefs. But then again, you know, some of the luster was knocked off that season when they lost to the Pats and then lost to the Chargers thereafter. So it doesn't surprise me if it seemed a little less loud. And who knows? Maybe the NFL caught him and said, no more piping in sound. Who knows? Joshua says, Dwayne Starks definitely should not have collected a paycheck after that Monday Night Football loss to the Colts. Thank God that guy was finally dispatched for Hobbs halfway through that game. That was a PFW in progress question earlier. All right, here we go. David from Abington, Virginia says, I'm tired of the tired of the running up the score discussion. He says they spend all week practicing a different game plan. They are game time practicing defense that could be different, 3-4, 4-3. Remember the 37 years of pain we've gone through around here? Out of all the 18 teams that have gone 10-0, only 5 won the Super Bowl, so they need to play 100% of the way in order to win the Super Bowl. Obvious. Oh, okay, I see. He sent this one again. Sorry about that, Dave. We did read it earlier. Andy in Vermont. John, missed you last week, but your fill-ins did a good job. I'm glad to hear that. And we do thank Michael Parenti from the Woonsocket Call and the Journal Register newspapers for filling in for us last week when we were away on a basketball assignment. He says, yes, I am tired of the Patriots being called bullies, but at the same time, they have been crushing just about everything in their way, and I love it. Joey Harrington? He's terrible. What is Mr. Easterbrook smoking? Some high-octane crack? That's too funny. You cannot jam these guys on the outside because you've got Watson, Welker, and various others. Brady will find an opening. Take what you give him till you change it up. Plus, Moss can torch the jam if you do it too much. Stallworth can fly too, but he may be the most susceptible to being jammed. Anyway, good luck with that. Laugh out loud, he says, and I understand with that one. Dave says, according to Jim Mora, he said, the Patriots are magnificent. Yes. That's also what Marv Levy said. The Patriots are magnificent. And those were their words, in fact. Larry writes, he says, John, excuse me, as a fan of sports, when I sit down to watch a game, I want to see a whole game with hard playing for 60 minutes. That's the business they're in, the entertainment business. When people say they should take a knee, I see for whose benefit? Players are paid to play, and we watch for the entertainment value. Players owe it to the fans to play to the whistle and amaze us and involve us till the very end. Larry, I really couldn't have put it better. For the prices that, you know, you pay for tickets, and what it costs to go to an NFL game, what it costs really to be an NFL fan, you expect nothing but 110% effort, you know, from start to finish. And so for people to say, you know, take a knee, good sportsmanship, I mean, that is just the height of absolute utter hypocrisy. First of all, the pros are not the ones you should be picking off. And I mentioned this in the opening hour of the program today, if you just tuned in or you tuned in late. You got to start with the high schools and the colleges where, you know, running up the score is routine. In fact, it happens every week. It's just, you know, start with them first before you deal with paid professionals who are paid to do a job. There's no sportsmanship involved here. In fact, running it up, poor sportsmanship would be taking a knee. I mean, if you've ever played, if you've ever put on a jock strap, okay? Forgive me, ladies, you know what I'm talking about when I say that, and I know there are female listeners here who are also athletes and have been athletes. And the biggest insult you could be paid is if your opponent laid down in front of you. I know when I played basketball, I hated when a team let up. If a team's going to whip me, I want them to whip me to the very end, and I'm going to stand there or I'm going to run there and take it, and I'm going to do the very best I can until the clock says zero. And if they whip me, then I'm going to say, hey, you played a great game, congratulations. And it's going to make me that much more determined to come out the next time and do a better job. That's what sports is all about. It's about the ability to pick yourself up and get back out there, even in the face of adversity and or defeat. And if a guy's going to lay down, that's an insult. That, my friends, is poor sportsmanship. I would argue that anybody uses the Patriots running up the score as an example of poor sportsmanship has never worn a jock, ever. That's what I think. All right. Scott says, John, I had a thought about parity in the league. Salary cap was designed, as we know, to help create parity, and many have expressed shock and awe at the Patriots' dominance. I think what's going on is that the folks who created the salary cap system never consider that players may take less to go play for a certain team. That is, the salary cap system is predicated on the quite natural assumption that every individual will want to try to maximize his salary. It makes sense until you consider other motivations. For instance, a player may want to go to a team in the offseason that seems to have the best chance of winning during the upcoming season, or a player may want to prove his value. The guys who built the salary cap system probably never considered that a Randy Moss would take a pay cut from roughly $9 million to a little over $3 million, plus escalators, of course, in order to go to New England to try to win a championship and then rebuild his relationship along the way. Perhaps they also didn't think that a guy like Bruschi could take a type of hometown discount, negotiating his own deals and trying to stay in one place for a variety of his own reasons. I'm sure there are better examples, and this is just something I'm bouncing off the wall to see if it makes sense, but I think there's something here. I'd like to hear your thoughts on it as well. I think it's a great point, Scott. I do think those that came up with the salary cap system didn't figure that too many players, I'm sure they probably didn't think every player, but too many players would opt for a lesser salary in exchange for a chance to win. But that's how the Patriots have circumvented the quote-unquote parity rules in the NFL. They have players bought in to this system and buying into the quote-unquote Patriot way. Come here, toe the line, do your job, compete for a championship. Pretty good thing to do. And when we all know that players realize that it's one thing to make $10 million, $9 million, whatever a year, but championships last forever. These guys want to leave a legacy. They want to be remembered. And those that are remembered most fondly, and those that have a chance at being remembered for years and years to come, are players that win, with very few exceptions. One of them might be Dan Marino, maybe. But every other great player that you think of in this league, they've won championships. Randy Moss is that way. There are others on this team that are that way. That's why they come here. They want a chance to win. They want to be known as a champion. The rest of it is just gravy. And he's right when he says, hey, I have a lot of money. I don't need any more money. What I want is a chance to win. That's why he's doing it. He's found the spot. He's happy here. Says, meanwhile, I loved your dismantling of Easterbrook. I usually like his articles, but recently his crusade against the Patriots has gone from silly to unworthy of a writer for a major media outlet. Well, I agree. And, you know, thanks for the note, Scott. And if you want to read his stuff, you can go see his TMQ column on ESPN.com again. It came out a little bit earlier this afternoon, and it's just gotten ridiculous now. It's too cliche. And plus, it's just stupid. I would give the guy some football credit, but he's beating a drum that doesn't make any sense. Just doesn't make any sense. Thank you for your emails today, gang. Tomorrow's program, we will probably, I think we're going to go, we're going to try to get into the locker room for some tomorrow, and we'll also have the conference calls with the Eagles, I believe, tomorrow, and obviously with the Eagles coming to town. Talk about a guy who's had a rough season. How about Andy Reid? You know, I can only sympathize with what he's had to go through with his family and his two kids, going through all their legal troubles and drug troubles and things like that he's gone through, and the fact that football is probably a safe haven for him right now. I wouldn't wish that on anybody. So I'm certainly not going to be one to cast aspersions or take pot shots at a guy like Coach Reid. You got to walk a mile in his shoes, I think, before you really do that. So, he's had a difficult year. The Eagles have had a difficult year. The Eagles were a team that I think a lot of people thought would definitely bounce back and bounce back strong this year to be an NFC contender. They're not out of it at 5-5, but they have been staggered with some lefts and some rights. The Cowboys have left them, you know, all but out of the race, certainly now in the NFC East. So the Eagles need to win on Sunday, hard as it may be believed, just to stay in the hunt for a potential playoff spot in the NFC. A win would add tremendous credibility to their season and keep them right in the hunt for a spot. So they definitely have something to play for. Is that going to be enough, though, is the big question. So we'll probably spend some time discussing that as well tomorrow. We'll look forward to getting your emails and then some, as tomorrow will be the final program of the week before we turn it over to the Thanksgiving Day holiday and football on the weekend. All right, let's get a hold of Coach Belichick right now, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow.
Well, it was another short night, but good to get out of Buffalo with a win. Always good to win a division game on the road. As I said last night, I thought the players really did a good job in this game. We got off to a good start, played well early, played from ahead, and they made good plays in all three phases of the game, and that's why we were able to get on top and then kind of stay on top there and control the game. Because a lot of plays have been in the first half. So that was good. And now we have to put that one behind us and move on to Philadelphia. But it's always good to win a division game on the road. And we'll certainly take it.
Could there be, Coach, you think, a better trade than the one you made for Randy Moss when you look back at the last year? I mean, there's not a ton of trades in football, but when you look back at the last 10, 15
years. Well, I'm glad we have Randy Moss, put it that way. I'm glad we got him. He's certainly as a head coach. You know, never had a better receiver than Randy. You know, been on teams that have had a lot of the good receivers, but he's you know, he's very good, and he's been good for this football team. He's added a lot. He's brought all the leadership, as well as playmaking ability and a lot of versatility to our football team. So I'm glad we have him. I don't know about ranking anything. I don't know about all that, but I'm glad he's on our team. I'm glad he's playing for us.
If you're unsure about Donovan McNabb's status, how would you prepare the team for Philadelphia? We just assume that Donovan's going to play, or
yeah, until he's declared out, sure. Yeah, I mean, it's the same way we have to prepare for everybody. You know, last time I played Buffalo, two plays into the game or three plays, whatever it was. So, you know, if they're active, you got to prepare for them. Got to be you know, aware of everybody's capabilities and their strengths and their weaknesses, and how to defend them or how to attack them. You know, whoever's in the game. So, you know, you definitely get ready for the guys you think are going to be in there first, but anybody that plays. And then, you know, even guys that don't play, like, for example, last week against Buffalo, you know, the backup lineman, Preston, and what's his name, 73? I forget his name now. But anyway, you know, you got to be ready for those guys to come in there. The, you know, Seslak that they signed late in the week or whatever it was. You know, we watched film on him Saturday morning. So, you know, you prepare for all the guys that they can possibly play in the game, so you don't get surprised by them if they're in there, and try to put more time into the ones you think are most likely to play, but I think you've got to cover all your bases.
What do you think has been the biggest factor in Mike Vrabel's outstanding start?
I think Mike's been a good, consistent football player for us. For several years now, and he's done it again this year. You know, he's smart, he's tough, he's in good condition, strong, he's well prepared. You know, it's like having a coach on the field out there. He's a very good communicator, picks up offensive tendencies, and he's very adept at those type of things, making adjustments and playing good situational football. So he's been good at that for a while. He's been good at it this year.
Bill, you mentioned you, as a head coach, you haven't had a receiver as good as Randy. Have you had an offense as productive as the one you have right now, as consistently productive as the offense you have right now?
Well, statistically, of course not. I mean, nobody can say that, but yeah. But yeah, we've been productive. We'll see how it goes going forward. You know, we're going up against a good defense and good defensive coach this week, so that'll be a big challenge for us here in Philadelphia. But and we had good production last night, and that was good.
Steven, sometimes you get wowed by when you look at the numbers. You've been in the league a long time. Those numbers are not—they're unusual.
Yeah, but it's, you know, again, it's right now. It's in the rearview mirror, and put that behind us and look ahead to Philadelphia.
How did Kevin Fall bounce back from his injury?
Well, you know, we'll make all our injury announcements relative to practice on Wednesday. So, you know, we're not going to practice today. We're not going to practice tomorrow. So, you know, we'll see how those guys are when we come out on Wednesday. It'll be like that for everybody.
Do you anticipate a normal work week despite the holiday?
No, we'll probably shorten things up a little bit on Thursday. Yeah. But otherwise, it'll be pretty normal. Yeah.
Coach, you went for a couple times on fourth down in the second half. Can you talk about those decisions?
Well, I mean, our offense is moving the ball pretty well, and you know, with those situations, that point in the game, I think I really don't like kicking field goals, and I feel like that's just adding points. So, you know, I'd rather go for it on fourth down, give them an opportunity to stop us, and our offense is moving the ball well, so give them an opportunity to keep playing.
Bill, did you hear the chants of the Buffalo fans on one of the fourth downs? There was another chant. Does that have a place in the game?
What's that?
Chanting like that. I mean,
I don't know. Just trying to coach our team.
Go back to Donovan. Could you just talk about him as a quarterback and what you've noticed about him over the years?
Big, strong, athletic guy. Okay. He's got a great arm. Hard to tackle in the pocket. Athletic out of the pocket. Make all the throws. throw it as far as you want to throw it. You know, he's won a lot of games. I mean, that's the quarterback's main job is to win games. And you know, he's won a lot of them through the years in a lot of different ways. You know, managing the team, throwing the ball, running it, scrambling, you know, using his other weapons on the field, be they receivers, tight ends, backs. So, you know, he's a big part of a quarterback's job is to make the offense go. And that includes using all the people that are in the offense besides, you know, obviously himself. And so I think that's
Westbrook too.
Oh, sure. Yeah, Westbrook, he's outstanding. But, you know, they're tight ends, they're receivers, not just this year, but through the years. You know, I mean, what, four conference championship games? I mean, you know, that's winning a lot of games.